everybody.
Oh.
Hi.
That's how we're starting it? Just,
yeah, why not?
Just a generic old hi, hello, how are you?
Whatever. It works.
Hey. Hi, hello, how are you?
Hey, hello. What's going on?
Hey. Anything really happened with the Rockies last couple of days?
A set intro. No, not that I've heard of.
Yeah.
Not much going on.
So let's just talk about what the rotation looks like this year. Let's talk about your new one-eyed dog.
Yeah, we could talk about my one-eyed dog.
And that's not a euphemism.
That'll be episode 64 of the show, or of this lovely Rocky-centric podcast. She's awesome. If you follow me on Twitter, you've been getting a healthy dose of one-eyed dog photos. She's very cool. She's very cool.
You should see the coyote, though, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the story. I rescued this dog on Sunday from a cattle dog rescue in Denver. And she was a reservation dog in New Mexico, and they think she got in a fight with a damn coyote, and that's how she lost her eye.
Coyote.
But I bet the coyote probably lost his life.
Life.
That's what I bet.
Yeah.
That's what I bet. So, hey, this is going to be the topic of conversation for episode number 64.
Since you bought that dog... the Broncos are 1-0, and the Rockies are undefeated.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Based on strict records, I'm not saying any other context. I'm saying record-wise, the Rockies have not lost since you got that dog.
It's true. It's what undefeated means. I think it's 100% success rate, personally. I think it's a new era of Rockies baseball. Hey, hi, everyone. It's the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Maughan.
And I'm Anthony Masterson, number 64 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast.
Oh,
we are running low on uniform numbers.
Yeah,
we're getting
way down there.
Yeah, the next four episodes will be based on players who were relievers with the Rockies this past season. So gear up for that one. Today comes to you courtesy of Simon Castro.
Yeah, all
Simon right. Castro, number 64,
or the Yor Vitor Alba squared edition.
When I'm 64,
yeah. Yeah, this is the Paul McCartney edition. So welcome into the show. It is episode number 64 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. A lot to get to today. Let's get into it. Corey Dickerson, gone. No more
C-Dick.
Our breakout player that we picked as the PDP's breakout athlete of the year for the Rockies heading into the 2014 season, and then he did. He's gone. He's gone. He's out of here.
He's gone. He's gone. Oh, I...
So, what do you make of this? Let's give the parameters.
Let's break it down here. So Corey Dickerson and low A rookie ball third baseman Kevin Padlo traded to the Tampa Bay Rays for lefty reliever Jake McGee and minor league starting pitcher who was in high A ball German Marquez coming over to the Rockies.
Right,
Marquez spent last year in the Florida State League, had an ERA of 3.56, nice K to walk ratio, guy who pounds the strike zone, 104 strikeouts to 29 walks in 139 innings, a career strikeout to walk ratio of nearly 3-1, and
from all accounts, great stuff.
Yes, even that's what we've heard.
Even people who were very perplexed by the trade yesterday raved about Marquez in terms of his stuff and just needing to be able to harness it all, which he did a much better job of last year.
Yeah, sits in the low 90s and get it up to the mid or upper ones if needs to. But that's kind of what we've heard from Marquez. He does fit a mold of guys that Jeff Breidich likes to acquire. We'll get into that in a little bit. But right now, let's keep just breaking it down. The bare bones of it. So the Rockies lose Corey Dickerson, who spent parts of three seasons with the team, played in 265 games for the Rockies, hit .299 in his career, but over the last two seasons was about .308 with the batting average. In 2014, 131 games, hit .312, an OPS of .931, 24 jacks, 76 driven in. Last year, an injury-plagued season, which, in my opinion, could have something to do with what facilitated the actual trade itself. Spent three separate times on the DL last year, played in only 65 games, hit .304 in those 65 games with an .869 OPS, 10 home runs, and 31 driven in.
So, initial reaction. Nobody anywhere is coming out in favor of the Rockies' end of the deal on this.
On planet Earth.
We're not going to buck that trend. In terms of the value exchanged, here. It's not the worst trade that a team has ever made. It's not the worst trade the Rockies have ever made. I mean, I don't think it's a bad acquisition to acquire Jake McGee. He's, as the numbers show, he's a top 10 reliever in baseball. His Fangraphs WAR over the last few seasons is fifth best in baseball.
Yeah, and he has spent parts of six seasons with the Tampa Bay Rays, a career ERA of 2.77. 319 strikeouts in 259 and two-thirds innings. Dude throws hard as humanly possible.
Yeah,
only played
great.
39 games last year. He had some injury issues last year. 39 appearances, 6 out of 10 in save opportunities, but a 2.41 ERA, 48 punchouts and 37 and a third. In fact, going back all the way to 2012, even though he missed a good number of games last year, he still has the fifth most strikeouts of any AL reliever in that time, behind David Robertson, Greg Holland, Cody Allen in Cleveland, and Andrew Miller. Then it's Jake McGee. That's it. So Jake McGee is a very, very accomplished relief pitcher. He'll most likely slot into the ninth inning role at this point until Adam Ottavino comes back healthy, if he will still be with the Rockies come opening day. And that's another topic we will discuss as well. But as of right now, he's a big-time, hard-throwing, back-end-of-the-bullpen guy that the Rockies desperately needed. So, yes, you're trading from a position of strength, in my opinion, that you think you have with the Rockies. You have a lot of outfielders, most of them left-handed hitting, most of them
even the ones coming
in
up
the big
left-handed
leagues,
hitting.
Even though, yeah, exactly. And even that, or they're nearly ready to come make an impact this season in the big leagues, trading from a position of depth to a position of need. And that is what you get from Jake McGee. He solidifies the back end of that bullpen in a lot of different ways. I understand that there are a lot of people who are very upset that you traded Corey Dickerson, because everyone likes C-Dick. He was a big part of this team. He's clearly one of the better hitters you're going to have, but you know, there were definitely flaws in his game. He was hardly a perfect player. And I think just because he's a fan favorite, I think that's why people were upset, but I think there was definitely reasons why he was the one on the chopping block instead of, say, Carlos Gonzalez or Charlie Blackman.
Well, and I think that's where I disagree with a lot of the initial freakout. And I said yesterday, you know, just kind of going from a talent evaluating standpoint, the trade's not that bad of a trade. And Nick Groat kind of jumped on that and said, well, there's way more that goes into this than that. And I said, what? And he said, did they hold on to Cargo too long? Was there not an option to trade him? Did they actually tell him that he wouldn't be traded? Why Corey Dickerson? Whatever. Yeah, I get that. All of that stuff that goes around it is certainly part of it.
It's
but
not
when you're
super relevant. I don't
well,
think,
exactly. No. And when you're just evaluating value for value in a trade, I don't see it as a horrible trade. Yeah, there's a lot of other stuff that goes around it. Would I rather the Rockies have traded Charlie Blackman? Yeah, I think he has a much better trade value in this circumstance, and you probably could have attained a little bit more for him. That being said, who plays center field then? So you run yourself into a situation where you have no answer unless you acquire a center fielder coming back. David Dahl's not ready. You're not putting Cargo there. You're not going to put Gerardo Parra there. So then what do you do in that circumstance? Also, I think people are overvaluing Corey Dickerson a lot. I really like Corey Dickerson.
One of the best pure hitters we've seen in the last decade.
And a fun guy to watch. I love watching Corey Dickerson hit. Everybody loves watching Corey Dickerson hit. That 2014 season, that might be, I think it was Matt Gross today on Purple Row who said, maybe that's the best we're ever going to see out of Corey Dickerson. And if it is, that's a hell of a season. Corey Dickerson played in 131 games, OPS 931, 24 homers, 76 runs batted in. Somehow wasn't an all-star, didn't get any MVP votes, nothing. But he, that season, showed best case scenario Corey Dickerson. And it's a phenomenal best case scenario. But guy has a foot condition that could be a degenerative thing as his career goes on. So from a personal standpoint for him, I'm very happy for Corey Dickerson that he goes to the American League.
Absolutely.
And he'll have the opportunity to be a DH and get those days off of his feet. But you trade an above-average offensive outfielder, corner outfielder, who is also a well below-average defensive outfielder, with maybe average range and a well below-average arm, and you get a
playing in the one of the largest outfields,
right? Playing
in
the most difficult outfield to play in baseball, and you, in return, get a dominant reliever. Now, did the Rockies need a dominant back end reliever who they only have control of for the next 2 years. No, that's confusing.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot that goes into it here, yeah. And it's usually not dealing with it. It's what Nick Groke was talking about, this not dealing with the actual value for value itself.
Right.
A lot of guys just have inherent problems with trading everyday players for relievers, and I totally understand that.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's understandable.
But Corey Dickerson, the injuries he had last year and dealt with, the plantar fasciitis, I mean, it's not something that is just going to go away with rest and relaxation. I mean, it's something that could always keep cropping up. And with a guy like him, you're playing him in left field, or you have to play him in left field or whatever every day. So he's going to be running on that foot all the time. He's already wasn't a very good defensive outfielder anyway. He wasn't a very good base runner anyway. And I think those are the reasons why it went into the Rockies, seeing that he could be dealt for something. Now, if you think they could have gotten more for Corey Dickerson,
I'm
not sure that's the case because of the perception that he is a Coors Field creation. I mean, we saw Jeff Passan tweeted that yesterday, and there's obviously a lot more that goes into the Coors creation numbers. And Mike Petriello, he had the best article about it. If you go online and try to find it, we retweeted it yesterday, but talking about how the Coors effect not only affects the Rockies at home in positive ways, but it affects them on the road in negative ways.
Something that Matt Gross did an unbelievable job with a couple of seasons ago, wrote a fantastic piece for Purple Row on that.
But you look at the splits home and away in the career for Corey Dickerson. At home, 355, 410, 675 slash line, a 1085 OPS. On the road, 249, 286, 410, a 695 OPS. That's a 400-point difference in OPS. So people will look at that if they are uninformed and say, oh, well, he's just a Coors creation.
Right.
And so that's going to kill your leverage that you have if you're Jeff Bridges trying to trade a guy like Corey Dickerson. And I think the fact that he got a pitcher who pounds the strike zone with upside and high A ball and a strikeout back end of the bullpen guy, something the Rockies did not have, I think I'm not sure they could have gotten a lot more. And that's nothing against Corey Dickerson. We know the kind of player that he is, but I think the numbers bear it out in other ways that a national perception is very, very different than how we see Corey Dickerson. And that's no surprise. We see that a lot with a lot of guys that play in Coors Field. And we know, and everybody else outside the Rocky Mountain time zone does not.
Well, and that's where I was going with the tweet that Nick responded to yesterday, is people were acting yesterday like the Rockies traded away Babe Ruth. And Corey Dickerson, this is not us like attempting to whitewash who Corey Dickerson is or how much we've liked him, but you trade, like I said, an above average offensive and well below average defensive corner outfielder, and you get back a very good major league reliever. I understand the people who have qualms with trading away an everyday player for a reliever. That's fine. But as a trade goes, I don't know. You weren't going to pry Blake Snell or Brent Honeywell or those guys away from the Rays. That wasn't going to happen. You weren't going to get Chris Archer for Corey Dickerson.
Yeah, the Rays,
it's not happening.
The Rays don't lose many trades either.
No, true. Exactly. It's kind of one of those things. Somebody tweeted yesterday, if the Rays say something about a throw-in to a trade, just hang up the phone.
Yeah, that was
like they're going to fleece you somehow.
That was our buddy Boogie Rosenthal.
Yeah. Who works down in Tampa Bay. So the trade is, in terms of the values exchange, I think the trade is a fine trade. I love Kevin Padlo, but Kevin Padlo is blocked by multiple guys in the system, and he's a long ways off from making it to the major leagues. He's only 20 years old.
Four to five years.
No, he's only 19 years old.
If he makes it there. I mean, he played a little bit in Asheville last year, was
really
in over his head a little bit, really struggled.
He was
18
on opening day in the Sally League.
Yeah, exactly. He was way, way too young to be in that league. Came back to Boise, had a great season. They put up some really high numbers in a high octane offensive league. So if he comes back and becomes a great big leaguer down the line in 5 years, then you're gonna look at that and say, man, remember when we had Kevin Padlo?
Right.
But you can't build a team based on what guys can possibly do 5 years from now.
And not only that, but you can't do it when you already have multiple guys who are at the same position who have higher profiles and higher ceilings than him anyway. If Nolan Arenado stays here, then he's your guy 5 years from now. If he doesn't, Ryan McMahon is your guy 5 years from now. He's a better player than Kevin Padlo anyway.
Right.
So Kevin Padlo, I mean, I hope Kevin Padlo has a phenomenal career in the Rays system, makes it to the big leagues, and has a great career.
Absolutely.
But the Rockies need the depth in pitching more than they need the depth at third base. And so just in terms, and this is what I was trying to say yesterday, just in terms of the value exchange, it's not a terrible trade. But those are the things that we sort of like about it. I like German Marquez. I think he fits the Breidich doctrine, as we've dubbed it, hard throwing, a strike thrower, a guy who relies on his fastball, because that is what, you know, the very minimal, the modicum of research that's ever been done by anyone on how to be successful at Coors Field, which doesn't seem like it's ever really been done by the organization itself, is you need to have guys who throw good fastballs, because breaking balls don't work. Yeah, I know. Yeah. So I like, you know, everybody's like, oh, what is Jeff Breidich doing? None of his moves make sense. If you look at Jeff Breidich's moves, they're all following the same exact pattern. So I don't really agree with that assessment. The Breidich moves are all acquiring power guys who hit the strike zone. Everybody that the Rockies have picked up, Jairo Diaz, Miguel Castro, Jeff Hoffman, Jesus Tinoco, now German Marquez. Those are some of the names. That's all those guys do. They throw gas and they hit the strike zone. So everybody can say, oh, there's no plan. Jeff Breidich has no plan. It's the same pattern every trade. So maybe you trade a guy like Corey Dickerson in a spot where he is. And this is a good point that Matt Gross put. When does Matt Gross not put out a good point, by the way? Everything Matt Gross writes, I'm like, yeah, he's got a point. He's got a point here.
Because they're extensively researched. That's
right. Right, exactly. As Matt said, one of the most perplexing things is you trade Corey Dickerson at a point where his value is probably lower than it could ever be. I mean, that was the same conversation we had about Cargo last year. Was Cargo was coming off an awful season, a dismal injury-filled season. Why deal him then? So that, I think, is confusing to people. And I think the larger scheme of it is, why trade 4 years of a corner outfielder for 2 years of a team-controlled reliever? And on top of that, why shell out considerably more money for another corner outfielder in Gerardo Parra? Here is my take on that. Well, I should finish that sentence. Why do that when you're not going to contend in 2016? And that's the assumption that everybody has made. I don't know if the Rockies have made that assumption yet.
that's the worst part of it all. If they're trying to win in 2016, something is super flawed in this entire organization.
That, I think, at this
stage, considering the talent in the NL West this year.
Right. At this stage, if the Rockies think, oh, man, I mean, we're just Gerardo Parra and Jake McGee away from competing for a division title, then I think that's when I'm ready to throw in the towel in the front office.
I think your best case scenario was fourth this year in the NL West.
Yeah,
I
would say
so. If you finish above the Padres, sure, great. The D-backs and the Dodgers and the Giants, they're locked and loaded this year.
And it's
like,
an even
my goodness.
So we are.
Yeah, and it's an even year. So the Giants will win the World Series. Dodgers will be in the playoffs. D-backs will be good, or much better at the very least.
We've been willing to give the benefit of the doubt to Jeff Breidich in the front office for a long time. And where everybody doesn't see a plan in this, I think there is certainly a pattern among all of these trades. However, if these are moves to compete in 2016, if the Rockies, and I, at first I was very annoyed by this, and now I kind of like it, but one of the Rockies beat writers over the Denver Post, who is not Nick Groke, asked Jeff Breidich yesterday, do you think you can compete for a division title in 2016? And Jeff's response was, we're going to try to win as many games as we can. And at first I was so annoyed with the coach speak from Jeff Breidich. Now I love it. Like, I hope Breidich just stonewalls everything from here on out, because A, it pisses everybody off, which I find hilarious, and B, that's what normal sports executives do. Dan O'Dowd would go off, shoot his mouth off like an idiot about Dexter Fowler or whatever the hell else he wanted to talk about, ruin trade pieces, and everybody was like, well, at least he's saying what he thinks. No!
Don't say what you think.
Act like an idiot. Act like Bill Belichick. I'm fine with that. Whatever.
Sure.
So I don't know. I mean, but
it's not your job to be there like yelling and screaming about like trades and who you want and who has value on your team. Exactly.
That's dumb podcasters.
That's idiot media's job.
If in fact the Rockies do not make some more moves that ostensibly suggest, no, we're positioning ourselves for 2017, then I'm a little worried that the front office is still sort of in that Pyongyang mentality that we've talked about so much, where the world looks so vastly different from the inside than it does to everybody else from the outside. But I do not agree with the assessment that there's no pattern in what Jeff Breidich is doing and none of this makes sense. I categorically disagree with that in every way. I fundamentally disagree with the idea that there's no pattern in this.
Yeah, he is trading veterans who have proven themselves at the major league level for young starting pitching, young relief pitching, who is ready to contribute within a couple of seasons. And they have a distinct plan about them. They have a mentality that they throw strikes, they throw hard, they can get strikeouts, swings and misses. And he's trusting himself in the draft. I mean, that's basically what he's going to be doing from here on out. I mean, it's what he has to do. It's what you have to do as a general manager in Colorado. You have to trust your own player development. And right now the Rockies have one of the best farm systems in the big leagues. So he is already adding to a very, very deep system, getting more high-end arms that are ready to contribute very soon, in at least in theory. So, I mean, 2016 is the season you want to see strides made in a lot of areas. You want to see some of your big-time prospects at least maybe make their debuts come September. And then 2017 is when you take the next step into some form of contention. Who knows? But that's what it seems like to us right now, at least. And there were some the idiotic reactions on Twitter yesterday about, like, people wanting Jeff Bridges to be fired. It's like, God, you guys just don't know, like, how this works. Like, it's not – he's not going to be fired based on two trades when he's been there for a month or a year and a half.
God, I mean, knows he's just not going to be fired if he goes to the playoffs twice in 15 years either.
Yeah, exactly. So have you seen what it takes to get fired in the Rockies organization? Like, I don't even know what it takes to get fired, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah,
because the people who were quote unquote fired walked away.
Right.
I mean, like,
they turned down extensions.
They were fired. They turned down extensions and walked away. So no one can get fired in the Colorado Rockies organization. So just know that.
I see it as, okay, now there was a very good point on, I believe it was on FanGraphs today, which is that what makes this confusing more than just the parameters of what the Rockies are doing outside of the trade itself, what makes the trade confusing is if you're bringing in Jake McGee, the initial reaction is, okay, well, the Rockies are going to try to spin him into another package at some point down the road. But adding a reliever and asking him to pitch in Coors Field is not really a way to increase his trade value. So that makes it a little bit more confusing. I think that would seem to be the Rockies' best approach to this, is see what you can get out of Jake McGee. If he has a John Axford-like start to the 2016 season, which I don't think is out of the question, then trade him and get something for him.
Don't hold on to him to let him just implode on himself like the house of the usher.
Right. Especially because that is the in vogue thing in baseball now, is what the Yankees have done this offseason, what the Royals, what the Giants, what all these teams who have built dominant
bullpens
do. Yankees
have done nothing this offseason.
I've acquired Aroldis Chapman.
They have not signed a major league free agent for the first time in their history,
which is ridiculous. But in terms of the bullpen in this idea of shortening games with Andrew Miller, Dellin Betances, Aroldis Chapman, depending on what he's going to be facing going into 2016, despite not being charged.
Yeah, speaking of that.
So I see why Jake McGee would be an attractive guy to acquire and then later on be a trade piece. But if you're asking him to come into Coors Field and up his trade stock, that seems to be that seems to be a tall order as well. So
Hardy, yeah.
You know, I tweeted this out yesterday. I think this podcast is going to be a lot of, I don't know. I mean, I don't love it. It's not the worst thing in the world. I don't know. Which is kind of where I am with it.
Pretty accurate, I think. That's kind of where we're sitting right now. Like, yeah, and of course we don't like it. We're trying to rationalize it based on what we've seen.
But let me ask you this. And again, I mean, 2016, I guess this question comes in a vacuum because neither of us, and I don't think anybody thinks the Rockies are going to be contending for the playoffs in 2016, maybe outside of the front office, and we don't know if they think that or not. But the Rockies are, when waking up on January 29th, it's a better team than they were on January 28th, is it not? At least for 2016 and 2017. I don't see losing Corey Dickerson and having Gerardo Parra in that spot. Are they a more expensive team? Yeah. But everybody bitches and moans about the Rockies never spending money. Okay, so they're spending money and the team is improved over what it was yesterday or this time 2 weeks ago. And both of those guys could theoretically be a part of a contending team in 2017. So I am not really seeing, I think everybody wanted that big splash move to happen. And trading Corey Dickerson for a reliever and a minor league starter for a minor league third baseman is not the sexy move. But I don't think anybody can look at this roster today and say that it's worse off than what it was this time yesterday or 2 weeks ago. Gerardo Parr is going to be a vast defensive upgrade, and he'll be around the same type of offensive player or a little bit worse than Corey Dickerson. And Jake McGee gives you something in the bullpen that you desperately need.
I think it's predicated on the fact that fans are more intrigued by what an offensive player can do because they see him every day than what a reliever or a starter can do because they see him once every two or three or 5 days.
So and it's much easier to evaluate a guy who's a hitter than evaluate his defense or evaluate relief work or all that kind of stuff. That's true. It's a good point.
I think it's more about perceived value than it is actual value. And Corey Dickerson had a lot of perceived value when he was healthy because he was such a great hitter and brought a lot to that lineup.
Right.
But I mean, there's a lot of things going into it that Corey Dickerson was very much an expendable piece of this team. And it's not a knock on Corey Dickerson.
Right.
But considering the other guys that you had, I think it's okay.
I think it's
better than trading Blackman, who has a lot more value considering his, you know, his ability to run and everything as well. I don't know. I think there were reasons why Jeff Breidich did it this way.
I think so too. And maybe we're still giving too much benefit of the doubt to Jeff Breidich, but to sit here and suggest that, oh, the Rockies, they have no idea what they're doing because none of these moves follow any sort of pattern. These moves all follow the exact same pattern. I have no idea how that argument has any validity because when you look at it, the Parra signing is the most confusing one of all of them because you shell out money to add to a position that you were looking to subtract from. But then you do the subtraction. Now it looks like you're probably upgraded in that position. And in the subtraction, you've also upgraded another area of your team. So I don't know. Again, I mean, maybe we're the Monfort shills or we're the fan podcast, as somebody said the other day. But I just don't agree with that assessment that none of this follows a pattern and it's all just Jeff Breidich wandering blindly in the dark.
Yeah, like we're not being paid by anybody to say our opinion.
I wish.
Because, I mean,
the Rockies want to hire us and give us money. I'd be fine with that. I'll shoot for money.
Yeah, we just say whatever they want. God,
I'll be somebody's whore. I don't care.
Yeah. I don't have any like morals or or anything like that.
Yeah,
I'll totally go on and say, you know what? I think they should trade Carlos Gonzalez for Dellin Betances straight up.
The good news is the sports show is on it today.
Don't worry. Great.
Don't worry.
I'm sure there's a lot of nuance there.
A conversation about it. I mean, I don't know. Is it... Again, this is just, man, this podcast, if you want non-nuanced takes on is it the greatest trade ever or the worst trade ever, we're like the worst people to come to for that. So I'm really sorry.
Okay, so this is actually really good. So go back to the beginning of 2014, and you look at the Rockies with and without Corey Dickerson in the lineup, and it's perfect. It's a perfect split because there's been 162 games with and 162 without. Full season worth of games. With Corey Dickerson, team is 64-98. Without 70-92. But obviously, that's pitching, whatever. Offensively, here we go. With Corey Dickerson in the lineup, the batting average, 272. Without, 270. OBP, with Corey Dickerson, 321. Without, 321. Slugging, with, 439. Without, 439. Runs per game, with, 4.62. Without, 4.59. Home runs per game with 113. Without 117.
Holy
walks
cow.
Per game with 236. Without 248. And it's...
Wow. You need to put all that together and tweet it like right now. But I mean, that's what I'm saying is... Okay, and I don't want to... And maybe this metaphor will be lost. Maybe it's an incorrect thing. But remember the way the Broncos were with running backs in the early 2000s?
Ruben Drones ran for 1,000 yards.
Exactly. You could put anybody. Olandis Gary. You could put anybody in that backfield, and they would have a 1,000-yard season. Anybody.
Yes. Because they were chop blocking everywhere.
Right, exactly. Because that was the creation of the system. Yeah. The creation of the system in Colorado is good offensive players. Gerardo Parra played in arguably Coors Field South for the majority of his career, and his numbers with Arizona were pretty damn good. Were they Corey Dickerson numbers? No, not necessarily, although there's a much smaller sample size for Corey Dickerson, 265 career games in Coors Field or with the Rockies versus 787 games for Gerardo Parra with the Diamondbacks. But Parra's slash line with the D-backs, 274, 326, 395, that's a 721 OPS. Over those games, 39 homers, 250 runs batted in. He scored 333 runs, stole 51 bags. I mean, a pretty dynamic offensive play. He was also caught 32 times. Not the greatest base runner in terms of his stolen base splits. But those numbers are going to get better at Coors Field, arguably. And he plays a much better outfield. So I just don't... I don't see it as the Rockies losing a massive offensive profile from the lineup that they're not going to be able to replace, and that is going to just grossly sink this team at the plate.
Right.
I don't know. And yeah, they're more expensive and the moves. And again, I mean, everybody complains they won't spend money. And then when they're spending money, everybody complains what they're spending money on. The moves are perplexing, but I don't think this is the thesis of my argument. The moves may be confusing, but I don't think that the Rockies have positioned themselves worse off for 2016 or beyond. I don't think you can make the argument that they are worse off today for this season, next season, and the year after than what they were this time yesterday before the trade went down. I really don't think that, because especially looking at Corey Dickerson, probably wasn't part of the long-term plan anyway. If you have David Dahl and Raimel Tapia coming up and you're not going to trade Carlos Gonzalez as it looks right now, or Charlie Blackmon, then Corey Dickerson's the odd man out anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah. They're not a worse team off from this deal. I really don't see that. The deal might be confusing, but I really don't see that it's a sinking ship because of this deal.
I agree. So yeah,
it's gonna suck.
It's gonna suck when Dickerson goes to the AL and is able to DH a lot and can just bat in the lineup and hit 40 homers, and it's gonna suck. And we're gonna go, oh, that was a stupid trade.
Well, but the other thing that's weird.
You look and see it's two different organizations. The Rays have a need for a guy like Corey Dickerson. Dickerson fits an AL team much more easily than he does an NL team, especially given his plantar fasciitis injury. Yeah, if you wanted to get more for him, then that's. Then that's your opinion, but I'm not sure he had as much value as we think he did.
That's the subtext to our thesis is I think people are pretty much grossly overvaluing Corey Dickerson. And, you know, we love Corey Dickerson, but again, you're not trading away a guy with Carlos Gonzalez's talent. He's just not that dynamic with the way he plays in the field. This is just kind of a different angle to this story, but this is another good point from Fangraphs. This trade doesn't make a ton of sense for the Rays either, because I'm not really sure where you put Corey Dickerson if you're the Rays at this point, because you already have Steven Souza and Desmond Jennings pretty well set as your corner outfielders to each side of Kevin Kiermaier. So I guess Dickerson platoons there, I assume, at some point. He's not going to move to first base. I mean, the Rockies could have tried that as well, but he's probably not going to do that because the Rays already have four guys basically competing for that job. James Loney and Logan Morrison, as well as Steve Pierce and Brandon Guyer. First two left-handed bats and the second two right-handed bats. So, I mean, there's already a logjam there. So I don't really know where Corey Dickerson fits in for the Rays, and that's not really part of the discussion or how it impacts the Rockies going forward, but it's a weird deal all around. But I certainly don't think that it is, you know, it's not like they shipped Tulo away and they got, you know, the resurrected ghost of Jeff Fassero.
Oh God, I wish we had Jeff Fassero, man.
The poor man's
championship. Oh God.
I don't know. Do I love it? No. Is it the worst thing in the world? No.
No.
We're all about nuance here on the Purple Dinosaur podcast.
Your analysis.
There it is. There's my analysis. So yeah, I mean, That's what we have.
Let's talk about the other little interesting piece of news
yes.
that Thomas Harding came out with this
yes.
morning. Carlos Gonzalez may be moving to first base.
So they had this logjam of outfielders, and then they were like, why don't we just move one of them? Okay.
sure.
All right.
Sure.
That's more confusing to me than the trade. I don't know. Your thoughts on this?
I mean, well, what we were talking about the whole offseason was, well, Dickerson can't play outfield. He's really bad at it. Move him to first base. The Rockies, for reasons that they had, obviously, I'm sure they had thought about that. I'm sure we weren't the only ones who were thinking like, hey, why don't you play Dickerson at first base then?
Right. Right.
If we think it, they've thought it. Okay. That's how it works. So for whatever reason, they abandoned that idea very, very quickly, saying, nah, it's not going to work. So if Dickerson was against it, if they saw him play there and it was just atrocious, it's not just like you can throw anybody at first base and go, okay, you'll be fine. Like, it's that scene from Moneyball. Like, tell me how hard playing first base is, Wash. It's incredibly hard.
It's incredibly hard.
So,
it's not that hard.
First base isn't one of those positions you can just throw anybody there and have it be okay. So there's simply a reason why they didn't want that to happen. Now, Carlos Gonzalez, of course, has been injury prone in his career as well. And he has never played anything but the outfield in his major or minor league career. So this must be something they have discussed internally. I'm not sure if they brought it to Carlos Gonzalez yet, but I will say right now that I feel sorry for the poor catcher who has to get a relay throw from Carlos Gonzalez from 83 feet and has to stand there and try to corral it.
That'll be fun.
It's going to be in the 14th row, or it's going to be going through the catcher's chest.
Yeah, basically. It doesn't seem super serious. Walt Weiss said, quote, cargo at first base is something we've talked about introducing a little bit this spring, but it's more of a potential long-term outlook. We're not really looking to circulate him at first base, just starting to introduce it in a practice setting. So it's not like, you know, starting opening day first baseman Carlos Gonzalez is the next thing on the horizon.
They want to see if it actually has a chance to work.
I don't know. I don't know. It doesn't really seem like, you know, it's not going to be it's not a definite thing going forward. It's, I don't know, I guess you make him a little bit more attractive to teams maybe that want to try him there down the road, if that's part of the thinking process for this also. I don't know. It's a decent amount of head scratchers, but I don't think it's as severe as, and you know, I mean, we've talked about this on virtually every episode since we started this podcast. The Rockies start behind the eight ball no matter what, because of who they are and because of the franchise's history in screwing things up. So no matter what the trade was, the perception was going to be, well, they screwed it up anyway. And they certainly don't do themselves any favors by, I mean, Ken Rosenthal wrote in his story yesterday that it's the second straight offseason that he's requested an interview with Jeff Breidich and been turned down. And we've said this multiple times in every edition of the podcast, I'm sure. The Rockies could do themselves some favors by being a little bit more open with the, even if it's just with the national media. I understand the local media. I mean, when you have one of your beat writers writing a column about the reason why the Rockies suck compared to the Broncos is they're not committed to winning, I understand why you'd be a little defensive around the local media, but maybe open yourselves up a little bit to have some conversations with guys like Ken Rosenthal or something to shed some light on what's going on inside. They start behind the eight ball. Everybody's going to assume that the moves are screwed up anyway. I just don't see them as being as bad as what everybody else has already lambasted them for being.
Yes. I mean, no matter what they do, there's going to be 70% of the Twitterati going after him and saying like, oh, well, this is stupid, the dumbasses, whatever. So, well, we're here to get past that, get through it, get the initial reaction out of the way, and then try to actually explain it and see if there's a reason why these moves are being made. So that's us. That one's on us. So that's kind of our job.
I don't know, man. I don't know what the hell this is.
We hope this helps some of you guys who are on the ledge about this.
Maybe it just gives you some different things to think about. You know what I mean? Like, I guess... Yeah. And again, when Nick said, no, I mean, it has a lot more to do with everything else that surrounds this trade. Why did they hold on to cargo so long? Why did they this? Why did they that? I don't have any answers to that, man. I don't work in the organization. I don't know. No. The value for value trade, I don't see as being horrible. I think people are grossly overvaluing Corey Dickerson. Is it – every trade has its positives, has its negatives. The Rockies already start with – A massive head start on the negative side of things because of who they are and their track record as an organization. Does that mean that the trade is the worst case scenario? No. So hopefully we've presented some alternative ways to look at it. Is it the best possible thing they could have done? Absolutely not. But hey, that's the world that we live in. Maybe they didn't trade Carlos Gonzalez because, I don't know, maybe a good enough trade package didn't come along. And had they traded Carlos Gonzalez for our good pal Connor Farrell, who, you know, is one of the best takes of takers on Twitter all the time, said yesterday in a tweet, this is the common reaction of Rockies fans. They need to trade for pitching. And then when the Rockies trade for pitching, I've never heard of these guys. And that's what it comes down to. No matter what, the Rockies do everything wrong. The Rockies are the New York Jets of the NFL draft. That's the Rockies. They're going to get booed no matter the move they make.
Yeah, that's true. Always. Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Maybe
what
we've given you something to think about.
No matter what happens, there's going to be everybody in the world just saying that they sucked at it. Whether it's Ken Rosenthal, it's Jeff Passan, it's all these national writers just saying, oh, what are the Rockies doing? They're trying something, man.
I just don't get.
They're trying to find some way to win in Denver consistently. They're trying to do it with pitching.
The two times
they've won in their careers or their franchise history, they've done it with pitching.
This is it to me. The Rockies know what they have and how their lineup is going to look in 2017 and beyond. I mean, as of right now, in the outfield, you'll have some combination of, let's say that they end up dealing Carlos Gonzalez, just to remove that from the table. You'll have some combination of, as it looks right now for 2017, Gerardo Parra, David Dahl, more than likely, and Charlie Blackmon in the outfield, with Raimel Tapia very, very close to being there to contributing. On the infield, you've got Nolan Arenado at third, Trevor Story at short, DJ LeMahieu probably still at second, and at first base, some combination of, who knows, Ben Paulson maybe
Gonzalez
there.
Carlos
Gonzalez maybe is there. You got Tom Murphy behind the plate, and you have a rotation that by 2017 is going to look pretty stacked in terms of the prospect profiles of the guys who are coming up. Jorge De La Rosa is still going to be there. Jorge De La Rosa, everybody loves. We know what he can be when he's good. But John Gray, if he can harness the stuff that he flashed on the road and figure out a way to be successful at home, Jeff Hoffman, I fully believe, will be there by the middle of this season if he starts off strong at AAA Albuquerque. Freeland could very well be there by the end of this season. You have so many pieces that are going to be in that rotation. Right now, the Rockies know what they are going to be as a position player group going forward for the next few years. They already have those guys ready. Those guys are on the way. What they don't know is how the pitching staff is going to look. That's what they're trying to mold. So if you don't think that Corey Dickerson is in your long-term plans and you think Jake McGee is an answer either as a trade piece or as a member of the back end of the bullpen, that's the more pressing issue for this team. They already know they've got people coming up who are going to be able to replace Corey Dickerson or fill in that spot as effectively or better than what they had there. That's my take on this. So to say that the Rockies have, they have no idea what they're doing. Yeah, they do. It's just already in the system. And that was my one beef with Ken Rosenthal's piece yesterday was, the Rockies are making moves like they think they're a contender. If that was the case, they should have gone out and thrown a boatload of money at Yoenis Cespedes or thrown a boatload of money at a starting pitcher. The Rockies have never done that. And what is Yoenis Cespedes going to do?
The one time they did do that, it backfired on them horribly.
Right, exactly. What is Yoenis Cespedes really going to add to this team to make them that much more of a contender? Cespedes is a great player, but if anybody looks at this roster and thinks that they're Yoenis Cespedes away from winning the division, is he going to throw 200 innings in the rotation? Because that's what they're missing. They're missing good pitching. That's what they've always been missing. So I don't. That was the assessment that I disagreed with. I don't know. I feel like I've tried to say the same thing 1,000 different ways, and hopefully it's gotten through in some sort of
some fashion. Yeah.
I don't know. All right. I don't know, man.
All right. Let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah, let's wrap this up. Jose Reyes more than likely going to be suspended for the first half of the season. That's what we've been hearing, so keep an eye on that.
Hopefully.
Brendan Rodgers, Ryan McMahon, Tommy Murphy, among the top 10 prospects at their position at MLB.com.
So we didn't even talk about MLB Network's horrific third baseman rankings, ranking Justin Turner ahead of Nolan Arenado.
Nah, because it's basically the equivalent of talking about like a Kisla column. So it's just at a national TV level. Yeah. So, we're good there.
Or about the fact that the Rockies put, seven players in the top 101 for Baseball Prospectus' top 100 prospects?
And top 100 from MLB.com coming out later today. This is Friday, so it'll be out later today. And I know there are a lot of guys on that list. So, keep that in mind as well. I don't know. It's remember,
I don't know.
It's never as bad as you've been led to believe, and it's never as good as you've been led to believe.
Remember, guys, win or lose, rain or shine, we support the Colorado Rockies.
Oh, mother of God. All right. Well, until next time, when Pete Rose joins the show.
Pete Royce. We're open a phone book, find a guy named Pete Royce. Bring him on the show.
Am I right?
No, next time we'll come up with the podcast, and we will do an actual dive into the farm system. We'll get Baseball Prospectus's rankings, MLB.com's rankings, and we'll just dive into how awesome the Rockies farm system is this year, because
we will do that in very short order. So
baseball season's coming, guys. It is what, 3 weeks?
I know, we're 3 weeks from pitchers, and not even 3 weeks from pitchers and catchers. Yeah. Get pumped. This has been the most informal episode of the show ever, but
and I'm boarding a plane in about 2 hours to go to Hawaii.
Hey, enjoy it.
Hey, man, you gotta love conference play. Gotta love Hawaii being part of the Big West. That's a free trip to Hawaii every year.
I want to go to Hawaii so bad. It's one of the places I've never been.
Why don't you come with me right now? All right. Just come out there. It's a Pro Bowl weekend, too. I won't see any Broncos, though.
Yeah, it's true. That is true.
Womp womp.
all right. Hey, have a safe trip, big guy.
Hey, thanks, buddy.
You guys, next week, a couple weeks, sometime. Who knows?
Sometime. Just deal. Bye. Okay, we'll be on Twitter. Like, it's a free podcast.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Have you seen the Twitter account Nihilist Arby's? I don't know why it kills me all the time.
I have seen it. I do not follow it.
I don't know why. Yeah. Like, by morning, she'll be dead anyway. She can't take those oxys with her. Suffocate your grandmother real quick. Get turnt and get down to Arby's. Just like, fuck.
Oh, my God. That is great.
I love it.
Yesterday,
anyway.
On the 30th anniversary of the Challenger exploding, shuttle on down to Arby's for lunch, then wind up dead and alone in blackness. Eat Arby's. Oh, my God. Oh, that is terrible.
I love it.